Be careful.
No, we'll start some healthy trash talk among the counties.
Because these aren't, Jeff, you're exactly right. These are important, and it should be a big deal. And Bob's tried to make it a big deal. He presents it at spring conference. He buys the award.
Well, I will say but two out of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
That's some trash talk.
So can we raise that issue? Because so we got the other and we can push this in our offices.
Right.
But what about a rural office that's got two or three prosecutors? Mm-hmm. Right? Like who's gonna go around and be saying, hey, the Garfield County attorney had a heck of a case this year. He's never gonna nominate himself. And that's a check of people that are not gonna be a part of the system if they don't find a way to
So my answer to that is it's kind of goes with UPAA is you as bosses need to be nominating, you know, your support staff for that. Whereas we probably can make a better effort. Support staff can nominate their bosses or the attorneys in their office.
We did get one this year from a support staff.
Did we?
Your support staff knows what your prosecutors are going through. I mean, so.
And quite frankly, I mean, the nomination doesn't have to come from that office.
Nope.
No, it doesn't come
from anybody.
So if the AG's office is aware.
If the AG's office can get more aware of everything that's going around on the state, I'm happy to put together kind of nominations for some of the rural counties.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know how I get the information.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So like, and part of that's just communication and I can figure out a way to fix that.
And it's important for everybody to know as somebody who's on the committee, we're not just looking for some big popular case that was in the news.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Right?
And body of work is also important.
Exactly.
There's a lot of things that our committee would review that might trump one big giant case that was in the news for 4 years, right?
Definitely.
Like there's a lot of good work our prosecutors do that don't involve just high profile cases.
Right.
And so
community.
You know, we've talked about it. We wish more people, we went to our OOPA conference last year and begged OOPA misdemeanor prosecutors to nominate people, and we got one. And I like three sentences.
You shouldn't feel obligated to make a nomination every year, but the greater the participation, the better the program.
Yep.
And I'm hoping that as years go by and people realize, you know, that it really is, you know, a big deal, we'll get more and more. But Ed, you had a comment.
Couple things. One, I'm sort of the exact opposite of you.
Yeah.
I like awards, but I don't like giving awards for the sake of just doing it. And the other thing that every year when I get Bob's email, it's like, oh shoot, at spring conference I thought about this and I haven't thought about it since. And kind of what you were saying, if we could keep that in the front of people's minds.
Do a better job of that.
I'm not quite sure how to do that.
Even if it's an automatic email that comes, you know, like once a quarter or something to remind people of the deadline and so forth, and please, you know, and make the process easy. We created the AG's office, whether we're still doing it or not, but it's a PDF fill-in form.
Right.
And they complete that, and then it goes into what they call a portfolio. So it's really easy to read and go through. But the more you can automate it, that kind of thing, that's very, very helpful.
Okay.
And I'd be willing to help in you folks in doing that. So.
Okay. And I, you know, as far as the misdemeanor prosecutors go, I've reviewed these applications, you know, been around a little while. But I remember when Tyson was a prosecutor, I would have nominated him pretty much every year and could have had a list of, you know, a bunch of things that he'd done.
He was my boss.
Yeah.
Stewart
would know. I would have.
Just go read the performance evaluations he gave you and then just disregard what he said.
But, you know, even I think that Tyson does what other misdemeanor prosecutors do within their own sphere equally. You know, can be compared equally to any.
Well, absolutely, it's just as important. But again,
it's tough.
You're right. I'm telling you, the high profile stuff tends to be noticed more.
Sure.
And you're gonna, I mean, I think misdemeanor prosecutors ought to be recognized and on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
So the takeaway from this is I don't think we need to make a decision right now.
No.
Is I can do a better job of getting the word out. We can talk, you know, to the OOMPA people, and then maybe in January at our council meeting we can. I like that idea, you know, sending out a reminder quarterly. Just start keeping track of what folks are doing. Send it to the UPA listserv, and so maybe, you know, that's something you guys can talk about at UPA in June. Is you know, for those in smaller offices, like, you know, Eric was pointing out, as support staff, we really want to recognize you know, everybody. So I think we can do a better job. Then maybe in January we can decide, are we going to, you know, go that route, do the misdemeanor, and as opposed to just the generic prosecutor of the year.
Well, okay. I mean, you could do a category with juvenile and misdemeanor, because juvenile attorneys get pretty much ignored as well.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But I guess I don't like the tiered idea of saying, okay, we've got the big guys over here with the felonies, and then we've got another award for little guys, which are the misdemeanors.
But this, it's not another. I mean, they're both getting.
You don't have to you don't have to say misdemeanor prosecutor. You can say prosecutor of the year, and you know. It's misdemeanor, you know, like you have two awards, two prosecutors of the year, and you just don't
right.
call it.
Right. And we actually talked about that last year is, so, you know, we can have more than one. It's just this year with the way that nominations came in, we didn't feel like we could choose more than one, but we this is something that we can fine tune. And
Maybe it's a years of experience. Maybe it's one for someone with less than 20 years of experience, one for someone with more than 20 years.
Yeah.
Maybe you're finding a way to differentiate. It's not.
Yeah. I mean, I just know, like, for example, we had an employee and then attorney of the year in at the AG's office. On the employee side, it is basically staff, so which included investigators, your paralegals, your legal assistants.
Mm-hmm.
The investigators tended to dominate that because they're working all these great cases,
yeah.
You know, and say, you know, the state all this money or whatever. So you just run into that.
Yeah.
And so I think both should be recognized as of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
mm-hmm.
I think there ought to be different categories. So.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Resource prosecutor report.
Aside from my report, which is in there, you can read all the statistics, everything. Last quarter, Bob's alluded to this, but we did DUI boot camp. Was the first time UPC's ever done that in January. And that was a lot of work to put that together. We had to create a curriculum. We didn't go off of anything. We just kind of came up with what we wanted, and we put it together. Marilyn and Emma were rock stars getting everything arranged and then being there to support. Bob and Trent came and helped present at that. Trent actually stayed the whole time, kind of helped me just be a second eyes and ears at the conference, making sure things went smoothly. All of our reports are that it was really well received. We had prosecutors there that had been prosecutors more than 15 years saying, I had no idea about any of this. And some of it, not like the whole conference obviously, but some of the aspects talked about. And we're gonna change how they went about DUI prosecution because of that. The goal in this, from my perspective, was I wanted to eliminate as many barriers as I could of getting people there. And part of that is cost, right? And so we were able to go get a grant and we were able to fund everything for people to attend. They didn't have to pay a registration fee. We got there. The ones who needed to travel, we paid all their per diem. We were able to pay for their hotels, everything. And so we wanted to make it for offices, the only thing you have to do is let us use somebody, put a warm butt in the seat for us, and it's not gonna cost your offices anything. And we were able to do that, and I think it was really, really successful. Candidly, it's probably not something I'm gonna try and push that we do every single year, but maybe every other year. I think it was really well received, and it's certainly worthwhile on these DUI cases. I know we just came out of a discussion on felony versus misdemeanor, but I often hear when I go around and train officers that I get cross-examined on a DUI case more vigorously than I do on my homicide cases that I've investigated. And so I will often tell people, if you can prosecute and try a DUI case, you can try anything. There's not a case that is ever going to hit your docket that if you can successfully try that case with the way that defense attorneys litigate DUIs, you can litigate any type of case, and I believe that. So I think it's certainly worthwhile. It's something that we'll continue to do. I don't know that we'll continue to be able to make it completely free of charge in the future, but if we can, we will. Any questions on DUI boot camp? It's probably always going to stay a smaller course. We could have done more this year. It could be bigger than what we had it. We could cap it at a higher level, but being the first year, we just wanted to fill it out. But we're probably never going to have 100 people there, just with how it's going. Things we're doing now, Trent and I start the regional legislative updates next week, actually. We kicked that off, so if you have not seen the schedule for that and you want to participate, maybe we'll have Bob send it out to all his contacts. I can post it on the forum. We're in the middle of the master offense table update right now, which is an immense project every single year. This year, Trent and Bob have taken some of that burden off of me. I've done that myself every year until this year when I threw myself on the mercy of the court and said, I can't do this, so if you want it done, you have to help me.
It is a pain in the ask.
And I'm really actually happy that Bob's doing this year because he gets to appreciate what I've done for the last 9 years. And nobody else besides Ron actually knew any of the process. And so
it's so much work.
It is a ton of work. I'm talking dozens and dozens of hours of essentially data entry. But we can't really turn it over to just like even a law clerk because it's charging language. We have to review the charging language, make sure it's legal and proper and it's a huge project, but we'll have that done and ready to go by May 7th when all these bills go into effect. And Ron has a metric crap ton, which is a proper term of work to do once we're all done getting that into e-prosecutor. So team effort, but it will be done and ready to roll on May 7th when all that rolls out.
Are there any courts to adopt our master table?
Get them to enter people in for e-filing, and then maybe we'll have that conversation.
I'm just complaining because this year I'm doing justice in juvenile court for our office, and juvenile court's even worse than district court. They're not having charges in place, and it's.
So we do try to match up with the state's shared master offense table. In fact, we have to, because if we have something that's a different number than the state's, it will reject it and not let you file. And so it's been a rough process, but I think we're finally to the point where the court's following their own drafting rules on this.
They follow their own rules. If we follow their rules, it goes pretty smooth. Yeah.
But yet to be determined, because I have not got their list this year, so maybe they'll come out and completely change it again, and then we'll have to a whole bunch more work on our hands. So, things are moving along. We're busy, but that's how we like it to be.
And by the way, Trent is in Provo doing a domestic violence training with Equitas, so he's excused.
Let's take it off the menu item. Want to talk about some bar or CLE stuff?
So I am the resident expert on this one because I got roped into signing off on a letter to the legislative session, and I used to serve on the CLE board for the Supreme Court. So Senator Wyler, as part of his compromising with us to on one of his really good ideas, asked the AG's office and the county attorneys from the larger counties to send in a letter to the Supreme Court to asking that it require an hour of ethical training specific to prosecutors. Like, if you're in a prosecutorial role, you have to have a special hour of ethical training every year. I'm going to read it.
Make sure that we're ethical.
Because
we're not so many times.
Can all the smaller counties send an objective letter?
Yeah. On the duty to seek justice. So the MCLE people got this, and they looked at it, and they called me saying, we have serious concerns about starting to require, they've never required specific CLE for a practice area. and they worry that that's a slippery slope, that everybody, anybody who's ticked off at their contract attorney could be like, hey, I want all contract attorneys to do this, or, you know, like, and so they're not excited to go there